Good morning. So let me, while people are still coming, quickly go over what we said yesterday. So we're talking about Rindler, Rindler space-time. And for Rindler, we know the metric, right? We know the limitation of the coordinates, the spatial coordinate, and plus obviously the, we can add the other pieces, right? But not the x and y z. You won't write it in a specific format. You can write it in the azimuthal or x and y. Now this piece, I said in 1+1 at least, we know that it coming from Minkowski. If we worked our way to here, we knew it was gonna be only one quadrant of the Minkowski. So this is the, in this coordinate, you reach to x negative 1 over a. That's the end of the story. But if I didn't know the back story already, and all I knew was this metric, what I would see was just this piece, right? And say, well, this is my space-time, and this is the limit of the space-times. My t's are like this. T can go from minus infinity to plus infinity, but this one only from negative 1 over a to plus infinity. So obviously has a boundary. Then we looked at the boundary. We said, for example, if you look at the observer closer to this horizon, Rindler horizon, things get redshifted if they send signals to another observer. They get redshifted. The closer they get to the horizon, the more redshift. So if they get really, really asymptotic to this limit, it gets infinitely redshifted by the time it gets to here. So if I really did have a photon with finite frequency emitted by someone sitting on the horizon, it would get like zero redshift, or like the photon would have zero energy. On the other way, if I send it, I guess I cannot send it backwards in time, but if I send something, then it would get blue shifted infinitely. Now, then we said, okay, so if this is, this has a boundary and it's cut, what does it happen? Is there actual singularity, catastrophe happening at these boundaries or not? The space-time has really a cut, edged, you fall off, or something else happening? And then the, through the trick, I worked, because I knew the backstory, I worked my way backward. I said, well, there are these coordinate transformation. Yes, I know this goes to zero at this boundary. But if I change the coordinate and I found this other coordinates, which are based on the null rays, and gridded my coordinate based on them, so the light goes this direction and that direction. So I said, choose your coordinate axes to be these two. And I didn't remember which one was which. I think this one is V, I call. And this one would be U. Now you rewrite the metric in that coordinate. Still, I got some prefactor. I couldn't remove the singularity, right? Because let me see. Because that this at the, when I did this one, I had a still ds squared was negative e to the a v minus u plus the other piece, which is the x and y z. Now, again, at the boundary, u was reaching to infinity and v was getting to negative infinity. So still, I don't know what to do with this. Either this is blowing up or that one. I guess this one takes it. If I go to plus infinity, it goes to zero. And then I said, well, there is another trick you can do. And this is a third coordinate transformation, which did I have it somewhere? I don't have it in my notes right now, but I believe it was somehow I didn't bring the page 29, but well, maybe I did. Okay, that's good. So the new one is u is negative e minus, and I think you, one of you pointed out yesterday that there is a typo here in the notes. There should be a u, and if I'm not mistaken, there might be another typo here too. There should be something like this as well. Right. I thought I corrected a typo in my notes, but doesn't look like it. I will try to, at least for the next year, we have it right here.
What is that,
ds squared? So ds squared is the, so I'm just looking at the x direction and tx, so I'm not writing the dy squared plus dz squared piece of it. If I started from, yeah. So depending on which coordinate you write, I just write it as the other two directions. Well, it doesn't have to be close, so, but in the old days, if I use, but then I have to tell you what is R. So, but you can keep it as, or you can write it as, depending on what this X and Z is. Let's write it as that. Okay, now finally, with this last step, I managed to turn the metric into back into something that looked like flat. So this piece of it with this one then became just minus du dv. And turns out that parameterization that takes you here is like if you, it's because the direction of the axes don't change. With this one, still u is only function of u, little u, v is only function of capital V. All you are doing is you're changing the binning of units on this axis. You're saying, well, if it was u was one here, now change it such that your parameterization is given with this formula. And that is the affine parameterization. So you're going to affine parameterization, and then nicely, it removes the singularity. Now G UV is not either blowing up or zero, right? And then you say, well, now this one in this, what is happening to U and V, U is getting to be zero at this point, I believe, at the boundary, and V is zero here. So it goes from zero to infinity, and maybe also it goes, because of the negative I introduce, it changes the direction, so it goes from zero to infinity. Now, but then you say, well, what does it stop me from going beyond the boundary? Nothing drastic is happening to this boundary, at this boundary, U. This is well-behaved, regular. This is regular. Why don't you, instead of having this to be from 0 to plus infinity, just extend it all the way to negative infinity. And same thing with V. Which geometrically, practically means you go beyond this boundary. You manage to define the geometry such that it also covers the rest of the space, or like you extend it beyond. And then because you knew, now last thing you do, because I'm working my way backward, I know what these U and V are in Minkowski. I can do the last change of coordinates and take it back to Minkowski, which is what we did yesterday. And if I find it, right, so the last step to find your way back to Minkowski you take x to be v minus u and t to be u plus v, and then it takes you to ds squared is negative dt squared plus dx squared plus the and now you have managed to have a maximal space-time. It goes from negative infinity to plus infinity forever. So the point of this exercise was to tell you there was nothing very catastrophic or physical happening at this boundary. It was an artifact of the coordinate you started. This space-time is extendable, and in fact, in that coordinate, we do see either that coordinate or this coordinate. If something is like moving in that direction, it just moves and goes through nothing. It doesn't see anything, right? Because nothing's happening at the boundary. What we were perceiving as happening was really the fact that this observer was accelerating and moving. So to them, things seemed strange, things seemed to be vanishing at the horizon or being dark or things like that. But that was an artifact of like the acceleration or the coordinate frame they were using. Now, any question here? If that's clear, now I want to do the same exercise for Schwarzschild black hole, except that in Schwarzschild, we don't know the backstory. So therefore, it took 40 years for Kruskal to figure it out, I guess, from when the Schwarzschild wrote his solution to Kruskal to figure it out. And it wasn't very obvious, I guess, right? And to this day, you do these kind of exercises to check whether, for example, I just had a paper like 6 months ago about inflationary space-time. And basically, the problem was the same thing. Can we find coordinates to go beyond where we thought there is a boundary of inflationary space-time and geodesics were ending? And then the trick is coming with those coordinates and all of these things. And then, oh yes, in some cases you can, in some cases you cannot. So this is the moral of this story. So let's see what happens with Schwarzschild. Because we have the same dilemma there. And Schwarzschild black hole, because the stars, as we talked about it before, really, I know already the metric is not applicable beyond where you get close to the star. It's only applicable far. If I get close to the star, I have to take them out. So many other things that if the black hole, the close to r equal to zero limit, that's not even applicable. So when I said Schwarzschild, I mean Schwarzschild black hole. When I do get a horizon effect. So once again, now the metric is negative f dt squared plus f inverse dr squared. This depends on r. plus r squared d omega squared. F of r is 1 minus 2m over r. This is, I'm talking about a spherically symmetric space-time. So if r becomes equal to, let's call it r plus, or r Schwarzschild, sometimes people use Schwarzschild radius, then at that point, the metric is breaking down. This thing is going to zero, that thing is blowing up. And so in cases where I have, like if the mass is encapsulated within this radius, where I should be able to use the metric, the solution, it breaks down at this particular radius. So let's say, for example, let's say Earth. For Earth, if you take the radius of Earth is around 6,400 kilometer. So if I, what is the mass of the Earth? You take the mass of Earth and you calculate what r plus would be. In that case, you get 9 millimeter. So it's not applicable to Earth, right? Because not all the mass of the Earth is in this much radius. We are all sitting here. It's obviously much. So Earth the radius is much bigger. The M is like, obviously when I reach to R, the radius, then I have to refine the metric. So it's not anymore Schwarzschild. Same thing with Sun. So for Sun, what is it? I looked it up last night. I think it's around 8 to the 10 to the 5 kilometers. Schwarzschild radius is around 3 kilometers. So again, it's not applicable to Sun because the mass of Sun is not within this radius, right? It's much bigger distributed. Okay. And it took a long time to know, do we have objects that are compact enough that are described with this, which I guess the first observational evidence was the binary, let me see, no, that binary pulsar would be gravitational. It would be really the ones we had a few years ago, right? The one that got the Nobel. I mean, the observation was earlier, but the Nobel went out a few years ago. And we do actually have black holes, and now we have these elegant pictures. So what else? Yesterday in the tutorial, I said, okay, same thing that I told you here about redshifting happens here. So if I have an observer, really, I have a compact object, its mass is encapsulated within R plus, and I have some observer sending a signal to another observer statically sitting here. If I have someone exactly sitting, static sitting, it gets infinitely redshift, right? Because again, you had the ratio of this thing, and it was going to zero in the numerator, depending on how you wrote the ratio. So it gets infinitely redshift. If this one sends it, it gets infinitely blue shifted. Now, is something going wrong? Same question that I had in this case. What's going on at this boundary horizon of the black hole, which I can by now use. That's the horizon of the Rindler. This is the black hole horizon. That's the question we want to answer. So I think I have another nice thing to show you here. If I did the same thing with what I did with space, I try to plot it up in this coordinate. So this is the radial coordinate. This is T. Let's say this is R plus. And here, I don't know, things are getting blurry. But in this side, if I wanted to calculate what's the behavior of the null rays, so I have to set ds squared and the radial nonetheless, the ds squared equal to 0. Let's see what happens. So that tells me that, again, I'm taking d omega squared radial. So that tells me this is 0. These two have to be 0. So I take this to the other side. So I get dt has to be dt squared is 1 over f squared dr squared. So dt is plus minus 1 over f of r dr. So dt, so let's say I want to plot them, the slope of the null ray, how they look here. So then I have to look at dt by dr. And that would be plus and minus 1 over f of r. Right? Now if I have, therefore, a null ray starting here, I want to, there's going to be a outgoing null ray, and they're going to be ingoing null ray, depending on which sign I choose. Now, 1 over f of r would be r. So if this goes to infinity, very far from, much larger than r plus, then this is going to go to 0, so I get plus and minus 1. So it's similar to Minkowski, light cone looks like 45 degrees. So this is much larger than r plus. Okay, now I get closer and closer. As I get closer, r gets smaller, this gets greater, bigger, this gets a smaller, so this slope increases, right? Because one, so this is gonna go larger, a smaller, then inverse, greater. So it starts to basically pull up the slope of the light cone. So it becomes, starts to go higher, the same thing in this direction, the negative. So as you see, it gets a little bit squished, right? It's trying to close up. Now, if I get exactly or very close to r plus, then this is gonna go to 0. So the tangent is like infinite, so it becomes vertical. So as you get closer and closer, and then at this point, both of them are going upward, right? Both the ingoing null and outgoing ray. Really, all of your time-like trajectory got squished. So nothing from the light cone can make it out, right? And as you see, it gets harder and harder to get something to the observer at infinity, which kind of agrees with what we were seeing. Things get extremely redshifted, infinitely redshifted. So that's part of it, because if it comes from here, it has to go, I guess, infinitely until it gets to us. I don't know. So information has a harder time to reach us. Now, another point to which I mentioned in the beginning when I introduced this to you was that if from the GR point of view, you want to assess whether things are going wrong or not, what should you look at? Which parameters? If you want to know if geometry is regular or not. Uh-huh. Curvature scalars. But the thing is, this is a vacuum solution. So I already know r is 0, which is the trace. So that's okay. And as I mentioned, you go even higher. The next one is also zero. So if you stop there, you would think. Actually this one, I think this is also zero at horizon, but I know it's definitely zero at the center. I think it should be also zero at the horizon. Now you calculate things. Okay, Richard, they are all regular. In fact, they're all regular all the way up to here. Those remain zero up to here. The only thing that you know it goes wrong is at this location, you see it in the next order curvature, which is the Krishman scalar curvature. So at this point, you know, but that's still fine at the horizon. So even that one is okay. It only blows up when you go exactly to zero. So that's an indication that maybe things are okay at the horizon, yes.
How do you find the curvature if you don't know what the... Well, we found the vacuum solution, right?
Yeah.
So we haven't found the uncertainty inside the black hole, right?
You can take it literally. Use the formulas. You have all the G's. Use the formula for calculating a Riemann tensor, right?
Right, I can do that outside.
Oh, you're saying, well, how do you do it at the location where the derivative of the... No, but you can still do it. It has a wrong sign, but you can calculate it. Nothing tells you in the formula what's the sign of G00, right?
Right, that's fine. But I'm just saying, my Schwarzschild metric is a solution. It's a vacuum solution. But I'm using it to find something inside the black hole, which is not a vacuum.
Oh, okay. So then, yes. What I'm saying, let's assume this holds all the way to R2. Yeah, that's a good point.
So assume you have like a
exactly, point. Yeah. And then my point is, like, things that these curvatures are okay at the horizon. So there is an indication that there is no problem. So then there comes the next. So if this is the case, can I do, again, maybe this is a coordinate artifact, same as before. Can I do something to resolve that things are that are beyond R plus, or there is no boundary here? What's happening? So then I'm going to use the same trick as Rindler, therefore. And another interesting story, which I won't get into, I leave it, Daniel Bauman notes has it, is that if you take this metric and look at it perturbatively, only from in distances slightly larger than R locally, then you can turn the metric in that region into Rindler. It looks like Rindler, and then you know Rindler is okay. So then you say, well, that's another thing, that there must be some way to get around this problem, because in Rindler I know it can go beyond the horizon. So this is basically, so now what we want to do, cross-call extension, which happened much, much later, as I mentioned, extension in 1960. So, and the trick is similar as before, so we want to extend the manifold described by Schwarzschild. Use two tricks, following the null and second, switching to the same thing we did over there, the last step. See, when I was still in the null coordinate there, I still had a problem. Then we used the affine parameterization and it removed it. Does it work here too? So first go to the null direction, change the axis, and then use the affine parameterization. Now, while I was writing these lecture notes last night, two questions came up, but I didn't get to dig in. I leave it to you to do. One is that, what's the history of Rindler solution? When was it first? Was it after the fact, or was it before the, like, did Chris Kruskal know about it when he wrote it, or no, he didn't know it, and it was... The other thing that came to me is there a theorem that tells us when we have a singularity in the metric, when would this trick work or when would it not work? And they're like, maybe there is some, at least some semi-theorems that gives you some ideas. I don't know, but maybe you look it up and say under what situation it might work. But it definitely looks like it works here, it worked there. In fact, the problem I told you we were working on for inflation, it's kind of not quite this. There is another middle step, Eddington-Fellingstone coordinate transformation we make. That seemed to work in our case for some scenario. So there is something there. I don't know quite how to, probably mathematicians can formulate it themselves. Okay, so let's see. I already got you the null rays over there, right? I said, well, they have to satisfy those equations up over there. So that means if I integrate it out for any null ray, I can find its trajectory. So because I had all trajectories, they all have to satisfy this thing. And therefore, I know they must be, the relation between T and R must follow some integration. Plus some constant. So that constant gives me which trajectory I'm like, because obviously there's infinite null rays I can describe. Yeah. I wrote from some constant, and it doesn't matter what you write, right? Because then by adjusting this, you have to adjust this. As long as it's somewhere that is within the calculation realm of domain of the calculation. Okay, so let's see, can I do this again in a way that doesn't confuse you and me? So I'm gonna say, therefore, you do this integration. The part that is R dependent is going to be T is plus and minus R plus 2m ln of R over 2m minus 1. And you know what f of r is, right? It's 1 over, where is it? It's here. 1 minus 2m over. So you substitute that, do that integration, trust Mathematica or something to do it for you. And there will be the constant pieces from boundary and this, so it will be plus some constant. Now there are two kinds of trajectories, the ingoings one going towards the black hole, outgoings one. So depending on which sign you choose. And let me recall this whole expression in this bracket, R star, to simplify my life. So obviously R star is a function of R with that form. So there will be two kinds of trajectory, those that satisfy T minus R star is a constant, and let's call that constant U, and the ones that T plus R star is a constant. As you see, it's almost the same trick that I was doing up before, yesterday. So, and these ones, because as T increases, R is also increases, is that correct? I'm again confusing myself. I felt like this would be the ingoing ones, but it seems counterintuitive. No, it's correct, right? Because R increases, T increases. If R is very large, then this blows up though, so I have to expand it up. So it's not obvious to me. I was gonna drop this. I have to expand it to know what's happening in large R, but I know in large R it has to approach the Minkowski limit. I leave this to you again, but I think this is the ingoing one. Null rays, these are the outgoing. Because just looking at this, no, I don't know, why am I doing, this is confusing me. Because if this is T plus R are constant, then I'm talking usually about this line. But that's a T minus, this is a, so it is possible that I wrote this wrong. But I leave it, so figure out which one is out, which one is in. One of them, what am I doing wrong? The one, maybe. So let's say if this was Rindler again. So T minus R being constant corresponds to the 45 degree this line, right? So every point on that would be constant. So then this would be outgoing, and T plus would be the other ones. So yeah, I feel like maybe I'm mixing it up. Again, exercise for you to make sure I am. So this is outgoing. This is ingoing. Hopefully it doesn't mess up the rest of my arguments. Okay, now next stop, use them as your change the coordinate to U and V, which you can. It's a bit more complicated, as you see, because I have a long ln over there. So how do I invert it to define U as a function of R star? I have to put the whole thing in there, and then I have to calculate du. Well, the other way, I guess, if I'm substituting back in the metric. So you need to calculate dt and dr from here. So, but r is only function, r star is only function of r. So take the differentiation, calculate dt, dr star, right? Something like this. For example, dt minus r star dr would be du, and the same thing here. So do the conversation, eliminate, substitute for dt back in here, substitute for dr back in there. And then my claim is after you do all of those substitutions, that turns the metric in this form. Which is very simple. Now let's compare with Rindler, right? I had it very tough up there, except that I have R here. And the reason is it's not very analytical. I don't know how to write it in terms of U and V. To do that, I know what R star, so if I, the V minus U gives me R star. So R star is V minus U over 2. So I have to invert that function to figure out what R is as a function of U and V, which is not very easy, right? But the good thing, I don't need the R itself. I need F of R, so that is doable. That's the GZ, the component that shows up, that's analytic, and that's exactly F of R. That's simple. You do the steps and tell me if you get that or not. Okay. So then what? So I have R star, I have F of R. So let's look at this again. It has not solved my problem because regardless of, this is a still F of R, and F of R is still goes to zero at R plus, whatever that constitute in terms of U and V, which I have to, I guess, I do have it at some point. You can take a look at what happens to U and V at that point. Put the R plus here and see what's the limit of U and V in that location. I think, again, they are V infinite and U infinite, similar to Rindler. And that's the issue here. Let's see. In fact, right. I might. I wanted to tell you what we have to do it by itself, but I haven't written it in my notes. So if you take, for example, R to R plus, this is blowing up, right? It becomes negative. This becomes zero. So ln goes to negative infinity. Then it is plus. So therefore, in that case, R star is at R goes to R plus. Looks like it goes to negative infinity, right? Correct? Can anybody take me? Anyone? What's the limit of R star if R goes to R plus? That's it? Because you have to take the limit of this, right? This thing is R plus, so that's finite. But what happens to the ln? What? Okay. I was doing this French reading with my son last night. Whenever he doesn't know, he's like, bleh. I'm like, no, louder. So say it. If you know it, I'll say it. That's okay. Zero. So then what's happening? What is the log of zero? Huh? As if you have a log of a function, ln of x, and x goes to zero, what happens to ln? Loud, someone. Minus infinity. Okay. So I do have minus infinity. If r goes to r plus, this goes to minus infinity. So at r plus, therefore, u goes to plus infinity. And v goes to minus infinity. What was r plus? It was this boundary, right? So it looks like I still have u and v blowing up at this boundary. And therefore, this function, which I know what happens to it, if r goes to r plus, this function goes to zero, but even my coordinates are infinite. So the coordinates are getting there, but there is nothing beyond that that I can say, right? Okay, so then what do I do? Then comes the find the next trick. So now I say, well, let's remember what we did in the Rindler. After we got there and we still had a problem, we did this other one, affine parameterization. What does it do for us here? Does it help or not? So same. You have the trajectories, right? They're given by this one, for example. If I have something going along this direction, it's, or in this coordinate, it would be some has a u component, and then the v is zero, the r, the other ones are zero. I can use the geodesic equation in terms of some lambda, as consider a lambda to be affine, and then figure out what's the relation between u and affine. Drive the parameterization of u for that trajectory. And in that case, it seems you do that exercise, the parameterization for u becomes u minus u for m, and for the v1 becomes e to the v over 4m. And now you do the again change of coordinate, we calculate du, dv, which is not that hard here, right? Now I can do du, dv, substitute it here and here. The tricky part is again, calculate f of r, which f of r is easy enough in terms of r, but then how do I relate r to u and v? I have to go through this ugly function, r star, to invert it. But the good news is once you do that, the thing that shows up is not singular or zero anymore at the horizon. Someone check the notes. Am I missing a power here? Yes. Is it R cubed? That's what my memory. Yeah. Should be cubed, I think. Yeah. No? M is cubed. There was a 3 there somewhere. Okay. Everybody agrees there's a 3 here? Okay. What? Sorry. Okay. So now this one is well behaved at R plus, right? Because R plus, this is a finite number, this is a finite number, and this looks like it's okay. Now let me see what happens to you when I go to R plus. R goes to R plus. Then we just said u goes to plus infinity. So at that point, you think this one goes to zero. And v goes to also zero because v, capital V was going to. See, if I just take the Schwarzschild patch, do all of this coordinate transformation, then domain for u, and you can check the other end of it too, it's gonna cover u from zero to plus infinity, and v also infinity. So then you will say, well, what stops me to stop at zero? I can still go beyond that as long as I don't reach r equal to 0. U equal to 0 is no problem. The metric is well behind. It doesn't even change sign as I move. So just extend it out, right? Now, if you do that in this, I'm gonna turn instead of that shape into this coordinate system where u and v are our axes, which is gonna coincide with the previous one because those are gonna take them to always be 45 degrees. You will learn a little bit more about this kind of diagrams and Penrose diagrams in gravitational course later on. But if I do that, so let's see if I, so V equal to zero would be, so this I want to put it as U and this one as a V. So U equal to zero is this line and V equal to zero is this line. And then it's you have to, in this coordinate, du equal to zero, these are the light rays, right? Because the trajectories are u constant and v constants, which are the same as little v and little u constant. So the light rays are always all, so any of these would correspond, for example, to u equal to 1, 2, and so on. And the other way would be the v. So it would be, v to infinity. Which now maybe I wasn't that wrong in that. I said u constant ones were outgoing rays. U constant, now still I'm getting ingoing, so that's something it could be. I mean, so the U constant ones are these, and the V constant ones are these. I still have to figure that out, but okay, so then what's going on? So I'm saying, well, you reach V equal to zero, U equal to zero. Just extend it up, say, well, doesn't have to stop at zero. Extend this thing into negative infinity to plus infinity. And same thing, define geometries beyond that with the same metric. And therefore, you cover this rest of this or add, extend your manifold to a larger space-time, which is now, in fact, if you look at it for, if I'm going over here, this is V less than zero. Do I see it? V less than zero must correspond to R less than R plus, so inside the black hole. How would I see it here? Let's see, do I have, if V goes less than zero, then this must be, yeah, I wouldn't see it directly from here. Because this, by definition, the way I substitute it must be, I have to switch to something else. But, yeah, this, that's another thing for us as a homework. So this would correspond to region that goes inside the black hole. And then you also gain these other regions, spacetimes, which is, this part is a new part. It's something that is not even in there with the Schwarzschild, even if you go to the other side of the Schwarzschild where the sign of G00 changes. So my claim is that this piece, this quadrant, correspond to going to R less than 2m, and you still use the same metric. But the other side, is a new one, new piece, these things. That it's not very hard to show that if you go to this quadrant, then things are almost the same as before, except that you have another kind of a black hole, asymptotically flat. Things, the problem with my notation is if I wrote it in terms of U and V, I think this would have been much easier to see what happened. Maybe I do have it somewhere. I know this one is the exponential in terms of V and U, but I haven't written this one down. Oh, maybe if I'm not mistaken, this whole thing might be, and that might help us. E to the must be V times. Now, let me not give you something wrong, but I'm not sure how to, I don't remember how it looked like in U and V, but that if you wrote it down, then you can go in this other region. Yeah. You're saying the missing. Did I make a mistake here? You're saying if. So let's see. I'm saying at R plus. Okay, so the other direction. So this thing, U, it starts from plus infinity. Where does it go when R goes to plus infinity, right? And then. Yeah, let's see. So what happens to U as R goes to infinity? Is that your question? And if we have what happens to U, then we have the other limit of. So basically, we want to cover this side, right? What's happening to U and V here? So, it's plus infinity. This is plus infinity. So, R star is plus infinity. So, in that regime, and then U goes to so R goes to plus. U goes to minus infinity. And V goes to plus infinity. Yeah, the U and V themselves are complete at that, right? They cover plus and go from all the way to, but it's like they don't really assess anything below it. And they're not maximal as we see here. So now the capital, so now little u, as u goes to minus infinity, then this becomes plus infinity, and then this goes to, does it not have, let me see, because for U, did I put the minus? I think there is a reason I put the minus, but it is exactly what you're pointing out. Because if I take, let me see if I did draw it last night. Maybe that's all it. I think it was working last night. So let me just one more time look at my own, see what I say. So in my thing, it's, I'm saying, U goes from minus in. Okay, good. You were right. So I have it exactly as you were saying. This goes from minus infinity to zero. So therefore, it is directing, I guess, this way, which is like backward going, if I put the minus sign. But if you don't put the minus sign, and does David have plus sign or minus sign? Minus. So he's taking it to be that way. But you can't flip it. It doesn't matter. It's like the then do you start from, if you do it, then I think you go from minus infinity to zero. But my problem is basic. Go ahead. It is possible that that is the. So the way I wrote it last night was that this is u, and this is v. And in my note, I say this goes to infinity as you move there. So therefore, this is minus infinity. So these are negative. And this goes in this direction. I think now it makes sense. Right. So then, therefore, the U ones are, so these ones, whatever the U constants are ingoing, and the V constants are negative of outgoing. They're going outgoing. So if you multiply, because these are the V constants, right? So U. So U constants are going this way, and this is, yeah, it's kind of but the reason is the axis. Does that make sense or not? Not yet. Okay. So now the other two things that happen. So my claim is, again, therefore we have V negative here, U positive here. Now this region is still, you can get it from Schwarzschild by going to the r less than r minus. And then in this description, this is inside the black hole and r equal to zero singularity is happening somewhere here. Now this particular one that you obtain, which you didn't have from the Schwarzschild at all, even if you went beyond the horizon, it's a new piece. It's called white hole. Now, as opposed to what's happening in the black hole, which is you can see it here, you see from the black hole, no light ray can come out because they go 45 degrees in this direction or that direction, unless they go back in time, right? Which doesn't make sense. So every future directing light ray is coming this direction or that direction. So it's either going towards the black holes or they are coming far enough that they just continue and we see them, right? They're not coming from the black hole, from outside, from some, this is past infinity of Schwarzschild. But then if you have the white hole, it has the opposite, exact opposite behavior of the white hole, black hole. So in this case, things do come out of the white hole and reach the observers in infinity. But nothing can get into the white hole. Right? Because everything goes over there. And nothing can go faster than speed of light. And then this one is just another copy of another Schwarzschild, which is like a reflection of this to this. You gain another outside of the black hole solution. We can write it down, and it has, again, same story for this one. It sees the observers here, see a black hole here. This is their past infinity. So if they switch to this coordinate, there is a white hole behind in that coordinate behind that wall. And yeah, and then the black hole for them is here, right? And over here, as they move further and further, they reach flat solution, asymptotically flat solution. Any question?
People that use white hole as like a prediction of GI, or do people like it so far?
Well, it is a solution that exists. Now, will we? So the reason black holes are, I guess, prediction as existence is because there is another piece of the story that we are not covering here, which is if you have massive enough object, it will collapse and form a black hole. So I really don't have this, right? I have something, some star, and then eventually black hole forms if it's large enough and it collapses. Now with the white hole, I don't, as far as I know, there isn't any, there are some like hypotheses, maybe the universe is inside the white hole or things like that, but there isn't actual like physical process that we can predict their formation. So that makes it, I guess, harder to say, is it a prediction of GR or not? It's there as a solution, but does it exist? We have to come with some kind of dynamical resolution to see if does it exist or not.
So if I try to form it, perhaps I would like violate some of the energy conditions as well.
That is, yeah. Yeah, I don't even know what, to be honest, if there are any scenarios with they say how you could form a white hole. I know like there are these other things. Nothing comes to my mind as of a recent, like form, like a popular way of producing them. The unlike black hole, which are so naturally, they won't. Yeah, so that's the other thing I wanted to mention. Now, if you go to the actual world and you want to say what do we see, it's not this clean Schwarzschild black hole necessarily, because in astrophysical processes you have angular momentum and other thing. So you also there is another solution which goes beyond this, which is a Kerr solution. You get to see it in gravitational force when you also add a spin to the black hole. So that's more natural because if I have astrophysical processes and things are have angular momentum, then a spin naturally shows up. There is another one goes beyond Kerr solution when you can add charge as well and get black hole solutions. And then the black with the Kerr, this Kerr-Neumann, which you also have both a spin and the charge. And then there is Nordstrom, what's the name? Reinsen-Nordstrom. There you have the charge, but you don't have the spin. The charge is less motivated, but the spin is obviously very motivated, and people have put a, make estimation of that with gravitational wave and stuff. This is pretty much what I wanted to say. I'm a little bit unhappy about this, the sign thing. I have to again think it through. Every time I redo it, I confuse myself. But yeah, if there is one thing I like you to do is figure out to make sure which one is ingoing and which one is outgoing, to convince yourself. Other than that, I think I'm gonna stop the course at this point. So we'll finish it here for today and this core course, I guess. Okay. Any questions? Doesn't have to be about particularly this exercise. It is symmetrically so. And again, because I wrote it in this form and I'm not regretting it, if I wrote it in U and V, coordinate, it would make it much nicer to figure out when you switch the U and V. But it's not just T going to minus T in that solution, but it is true that it is obviously reverse of this, right? I think what you have to do, and it should be, so V here is negative. When you go over here, V becomes positive. And U, on the other hand, is positive. V is this one. U, this is V. This is U equal to 0. So this is V positive. So this would be V negative. Therefore, here is V positive as well. Now, let me do it. It's very busy here. Okay, so U positive, V positive. U negative, V negative, right? I have to swap the sign of both of them, the ingoing and outgoing. Then I think you get to that's this. And now, is that the same as changing only time direction? It is, right? Because these are future direction, then you make them past direction. And then, yes, it's a time symmetric solution in that sense. It's like if I change the past and future, that would be the white hole becomes black hole and black hole becomes white hole. Yes. You think it this is incoming? So let me, this is a piece that let's do it together now that we have time. So T minus R star, I take it to be U. T plus R star, I take it to be V. Now, if I take a constant U, then obviously then T is going to be R plus U. And now I have R plus, which is plus U. So for U equal to 0, for example, then I get if U is 0, R is equal to that. So now in the limit that R is, that's the my issue is. So then this is increasing with, so let's say R is obviously, I'm talking about this region. This is larger than this. So ln of R over m minus is the monotonically increasing. R is monotonically increasing. Therefore, the slope should be positive. So I should have something of this sort for u equal to 0. Right? Does that make sense? So that is an outgoing. And so what am I missing here? And then for the V is the other one, right? Then for V equal to 0, I have T is negative of R minus 2m. So again, this is monotonically decreasing. So therefore, for larger r, this should be this way. Oh, so then, so that's the trajectory, but maybe the issue is time increases, r increases, time increases. So it is true. And this one, r increases, time decreases. This was u. This is What do you think? So it looks like this is, and then if I take a minus v the other way around, then it is future directed. At least that's, but still this one is like ingoing or yeah, so this becomes right now the way I've written it, I think v is outgoing in the past. V constant and u is outgoing into the future. So it is usually what people mean when outgoing. I think that sense. This one I have to say, well, it is ingoing. I should have defined it as negative in order to be it ingoing because it's now looks obviously minus v goes in. This v is going to the past with this. But yeah, I cannot think of my head of like why am I thinking it is should be the other way around. Yeah, then that one also. So maybe this is maybe a convention between my calculation. Let me just look at the notes one more time. It is possible that notes by I'm missing something about David's notation versus my own. So because he doesn't write the middle step, right? So he writes it as exponential of r star minus t. Oh, okay, that solved one of our issues. No, but then I defined it at e to the minus u. So no, that doesn't define. So there is, he is also defining it, therefore, this is u. It is possible that, yeah, the way I'm thinking as v and u. No, this is. And then his axes are also. He's taking. I am taking this to be u and this to be v. And maybe that's you're right. This is the issue. This should be, and that might solve all of the problem. Because according to what I just drew, u constant should go that way. So if we swap this, that might help all our problems. Okay, and I had once again V constant and U constant. So maybe, yeah, that was the problem. I was looking at so U constant ones, therefore. Are these ones? Other way around, V goes from 0, so that's V equal to 0, and then Z we go to infinity. I think now it makes sense. My probably the only thing is my mismatching the names here. If I from the very beginning, because now looking at that picture, U constants are outgoing, which I kind of like we detected it there, and the V constant one are these ones. Now indeed the way we wrote it, they are really not ingoing. They are going in also outgoing, but the better way would be the minus V const, so if I did the minus V, they would go into the right because now they're going in the past. So let me put it this way, then it's correct. This is outgoing. Now, this is a minus of ingoing. That's I think with this, then it won't make sense because it's directing that way into the past. If I make it future like, then it goes into the black hole. Does that make sense? No? Or? And if you look at the picture in the notes, also you will see that he has the V and yeah, U is going that direction. Still something, no, he's having it that way. So you, but these are V constant ones. So V constant ones go across the horizon. But you have to multiply it by one, I think a negative sign to make it correctly. That's something here. Okay, I don't confuse you, but I might write a clean notes about this choice and then send it for you. To clarify the ingoing outgoing in David's notes. Okay, have fun. I have the Q&A this afternoon, and otherwise, good luck.